are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, January 22nd, 2019. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, government still shut down. Trump over the weekend offers warmed over Jared Pablum. Really, to be fair, I guess Stephen Miller Pablum. Meanwhile, PPP polling suggests Martin O'Malley could win in 2020. And as the Supreme Court begins its assault on gun control, study shows youth suicide rates correlate with states' rates of gun ownership. And at the Supreme Court, 5-4 majority revives the ban on transgender people serving in the military. Meanwhile, on the West Coast, LA teachers strike in day five. Is Denver, Colorado next? Over the weekend, Kamala Harris, Kristen Gillibrand entered the race. 26 people own the same amount of wealth as 3.8 billion people on this planet. I will repeat, 26 people own the same amount of wealth as 3.8 billion people.
Best of all possible worlds.
We all want to be successful.
Exactly. Four volunteers convicted for leaving water for migrants or immigrants in the desert. The existence of local papers is on the line as vulture capitalists circle. And Trump tried to withhold disaster relief from Puerto Rico because he's not racist. And speaking of which, if you think the border wall is some sort of totem for racists, the numbers So you are correct. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome back. I hope folks had a good MLK day. I imagine many did. Of course, from in terms of a national story, it was dominated by some jagoffs being jagoffs. 15-year-old Jagoffs being Jagoffs. We will get to that briefly. I should say in a moment. But also, some things happened on Friday before after we ended the show. And we'll get to that as well. The Digby and I had talked about this story that had dropped from BuzzFeed about what Donald Trump had told his lawyer, Michael Cohen, and in terms of what kind of testimony to give to Congress. There was a statement by Mueller. Well, we'll talk about that in a moment. We'll get to all that and more, folks. But welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us. As you know, we are a listener-supported program. You can engage in that activity of supporting this program by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. We also have ads. We'll get to that in a moment. But before we do, this was super curious. I mean, there's so many different cross currents going on right now in the news that it's almost, I mean, and honestly, like the past we took one day off, and it feels like the last time we were on was 6 months ago.
I felt like saying Happy New Year when I came back.
Honestly, the amount of, you know, we had at least two Democratic candidates announce over the weekend. we had all sorts of activity on the Mueller investigation. We have this continuing narrative of AOC and the messaging that she's basically doing on a whole host of issues that seemed impenetrable, well, certainly 3 years ago. Bernie broke down some of those walls in terms of a discussion. But really, I mean, impenetrable up until, like, I don't know, 6 weeks ago. I don't know. I've been walking around with a card in my wallet, and longtime listeners will know this, of the tax rates through the 50s and 60s to tell people as a party trick, just to freak people out. And I have never heard anyone on television explicitly say what the tax rates were in the 50s and 60s, like, you know, explicitly. And now it seems to be repeating constantly, basically because of AOC. And it's not going to take long before it becomes, you know, just sort of like another fact that is known. Like, we have Medicare. So it's incredible. And what's amazing, too, is to watch what the right try and react to this stuff. Because it's not just that they have a classic crappy retort to this. It's that it's making them fumble and bumble. So here is Tucker Carlson, who is, you know, as we've talked about over the past couple of weeks, an enlightened critic of market capitalism. And or is trying to play one on television, and he invites on an FBI guy to talk about the Mueller investigation, but he can't help himself to just take a pause before we get there, and it's fascinating to see what follows. Both the FBI, the former FBI, and he is the former he was high placed. This is not just an agent, right?
Tucker identifies him.
Yeah. He was a formerly
assistant director.
Assistant director. That's not, you know, this is not like, the third guy in the Duluth office for 6 months. And so he has him on to that because, you know, Tucker's trying to sort of like thread this needle with his market capitalism critique, but also trying to sidestep, I guess, like the sort of the burgeoning movement on the left that is founded on a capitalist market critique. And both he and the FBI guy step in it big time.
In the meantime, Terry Churchy was Deputy Assistant Director of the Counterterrorism Division of the FBI. And he joins us tonight. Terry, we originally asked you to come on tonight to talk about border security. But before we do, I want to ask you your response to this back and forth between BuzzFeed and the special counsel's office. What's your take?
Sure, Tucker. Well, I'm a skeptic because of being in law enforcement, but I think it's kind of pretty simple. When you take the election and you take the House and you now convert all the committees that you have to investigating various aspects.
Pause it for 1 second. I'm not sure exactly. He says he's a skeptic. He's a skeptical of, I'm not sure exactly what here, but law enforcement guys, usually when they were skeptical, would just tend to believe like the existence of an investigation was almost enough.
I was waiting for a critique of COINTELPRO.
Right.
I've been.
And you take the House and you now convert all the committees that you have to investigating various aspects of the President of the United States, then your lifeblood has to be to react to stories. So you're going to see more stories planted so that all these committees can have a lot of work to do. And I think this is just more of the same. And I think we can expect more of this because, quite honestly, the electorate in some places is putting more and more progressives and self-described socialists in positions. And ironically, years ago when I first got into the FBI, one of the missions of the FBI in its counterintelligence efforts was to try and keep these people out of government. Why? Because we would end up with massive dysfunction and massive disinformation and massive misinformation.
Pause it. Now, That's not supposedly what the mission of the FBI is. I hope I'm not breaking any news here. That was when they ran amok and they got out of their lane, we were told. But the idea that the former deputy assistant director of the FBI is now publicly admitting that one of their agendas was to keep progressives
AOCs out of
and
office.
Social Democrats out of office. I mean, this guy, I don't know how old he was when he, you know, like how many years ago we're talking about, but this wasn't like 1952, right? Like this is, he's talking about the 70s or the 80s or the 90s where he, the FBI is supposed to be keeping progressives and socialists out. Now, first off, to say that the reason why you would do that is because there's too much incompetence while you are defending the Trump administration, that is actually ironic. The idea that the FBI tried to keep people out of that, that's just a coincidence, or it's a failure of their abilities to do so. So here's this guy both claiming that somehow AOC has control over all of the Democrats in the party who are forcing these investigations. And it's called oversight, which apparently there needed to be more of the FBI during that time. And he's also saying that they bring about incompetence in government, which is a hoot. But here is where the civil libertarian Tucker Carlson, this is where he really pounces.
One of the missions of the FBI in its counterintelligence efforts was to try and keep these people out of government. Why? Because we would end up with massive dysfunction and massive disinformation and massive misinformation. And it seems to me that's where we're at today. I'm glad I don't live in D.C.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't know how you start to separate this and make head or tails from it, but it's a mess.
I mean, look, if you believe in socialism, if you've got some program you want to impose in the country, tell us what it is. Explain us how you think it works. Make the case for it. But these people are so stupid and so emotional, so overwrought, that they think that the key to running the country is an endless series of gotcha stories, criminalizing political disagreement. I mean, it's the least straightforward way to run a government, I would say.
Okay. So, I guess it turns out that his civil libertarian radar was not triggered there. But it's quite clear that the so-called socialists in the our government, to the extent that there are any, are explicitly laying out an agenda of what should be done. In fact, that's almost all that they get criticism for on the other parts of your channel, Tucker. And the idea that in some fashion holding oversight hearings on a president whose entire campaign apparatus is rife with already with convictions and guilty pleas seems, you know, at best, but the spurious. So both these guys messed up just in talking about as soon as they start to bring it to this notion of actual politics. I mean, and I think in one instance, one guy has to reveal that the FBI was incredibly corrupt and is lamenting those days. And Tucker has to create a straw man that somehow this is about SJW.
Triggered
stuff.
Snowflakes.
Exactly.
Yeah, remember the other day when he sounded like Elizabeth Warren with his critique of free market capitalism?
There were moments in that speech where he sounded like Elizabeth Warren, and then there were other moments where he sounded like just like every other conservative.
He sounded like somebody who might have been named Wilhelm in a certain period of
time.
Yeah,
it makes you wonder what his real differences are with these folks.
I think he needed to
but
pivot
I'm
quickly
amazed.
After there was an actual... like. Even by Fox standards, you're not supposed to go on and show the script like that. So he needed to just pivot.
I'm amazed, though, that there isn't been more talked about the fact that the former assistant director of the FBI has publicly stated that it was their job as part of counterintelligence.
Is it one of those things? This is super, like, how dare you? The FBI is so blah, blah, blah. And now everybody's all like, yeah, I saw the J. Edgar Hoover movie. We all know this. This is old news.
I think it's partly that. I think it's also partly apparatus. Like they don't want to criticize the FBI at this point.
Well, that's the danger of resist. The whole hashtag woke intelligence apparatus.
Maybe this reminder came at a good time.
Well, I don't know that anybody heard it, but...
do our part.
It would be nice.
Like they killed Fred Hampton. Like, it's insane that people aren't talking about that more.
Rasta don't work for no CIA.
Folks, inevitably we skimp on that full night of sleep. We skip a workout or brush our teeth with a tired old toothbrush.
We're not perfect, but we can do better.
That's right. Quip is a better electric toothbrush that can help. While some electric toothbrushes are too abrasive, Quip, because you got to take care of your gums. People don't understand anything about dental hygiene. And everything I learned about 15 years too late. I don't know if they want me to talk about that. But Quip has sensitive sonic vibrations for an effective clean that's gentle on your sensitive gums. Plus, it has a 2-minute timer that pulses every 30 seconds to remind you when to switch sides. It's got a multi-use cover that works as a stand, mounts to mirrors, and slides over your bristles to pack and protect your Quip on the go. No wonder Quip is one of the first electric toothbrushes accepted by the American Dental Association with thousands of verified 5-star reviews. Literally everyone I know that I come in contact with. I don't go into a bathroom now. It doesn't have a Quip. Now, I don't go into many bathrooms, but I'm just saying.
Hi. What do you have it here? I'm doing anthropological market-based research.
But I have said over and over again, electric toothbrushes are the way to go. But the biggest problem is people don't use them. They buy them, then they don't use them. The Quip you will use because it is basically the same size as a normal toothbrush. And they will send you every 3 months a new bristle head so you don't forget that you got to change it every 3 months. Because otherwise, you're just brushing with, you know, you might as well be brushing with a stick. And that's no good. Folks, trust me. You think it won't happen to you, but periodontal disease is not a joke. I'm there. Believe me, it is wretched. Brush your teeth well. The Quip helps you do it, and that's why I love Quip. With over 1 million happy, healthy mouths do too, Quip starts at just $25. And if you go to getquip.com/majority right now, you get your first refill pack. Toothpaste.
I just got my first refill pack. I'm so excited.
Even a battery. You get that for free. That's your first refill pack free at getquip.com/majority. getquip.com/majority. Check it out. Folks, what if 2019 was all about slowing down and being mindful?
Hell yeah.
It is for me.
No kidding,
it's
right?
Nice.
For me. Looks like it's going to be that way.
I'm going to be taking
imagine how many
breaths.
Goals you could accomplish. That's why we're excited to partner with Calm, the number one app to help you meditate, sleep, and relax.
Hell yeah.
Practices like meditation and prioritizing sleep can leave you feeling more rested so you have the energy to go out and achieve your goals. If you go to calm.com/majority, you get 25% off a Calm premium subscription, which includes hundreds of hours of programs like guided meditations on issues like anxiety, stress, and focus, including a brand new meditation each day called the Daily Calm. Sleep Stories, this is my favorite, which are bedtime stories for adults designed to help you relax before you doze off. Head to the Lavender Fields. I'm allergic to lavender, but you can't tell when you hear it.
Did somebody spray lavender here?
With Stephen Fry, or explore New Zealand with Jerome Flynn from Game of Thrones. You know who uses Calm in addition to me?
Who?
You'll never guess. My daughter.
Very
My 13-year-old daughter is using
that's
it.
Excellent.
For guided meditations.
That's helping her with school.
We'll see. She just started, actually. 2 weeks ago. For a limited time, Majority Report listeners get 25% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/majority. That's Calm, C-A-L-M, .com/majority. Get unlimited access to all of Calm's content today at calm.com/majority. Give yourself the gift of calm and start 2019 off right. Lastly,
I'm sorry. Can we just take a slight detour in? Like, close your eyes, breathe deeply. You're in a soothing lavender field.
Oh no! I'm in a lavender field. My eyes hurt.
It's not. It's not my eyes.
Let me go, Stephen Fry. I don't want to be in the lavender.
Yeah, I sneeze. I sneeze. If I don't smell it, it's fine.
Chew. Hit you.
And the thing is that I could go into a lavender field and probably, I don't get a reaction when I see lavender because it's never in that form.
Oh no, all lavender everywhere.
It's a real problem because people have lavender soap and they don't warn you. And if I wash my hands with it,
I've seen it be a real problem.
I have to like literally wash it with, I had this happen to me this weekend. Yep. What do you love most about shaving with Harry's? For me,
precision.
Well, I like the smaller blade head because I can deal with the asymmetry in my my nasal passages. But I get a good shave from it. I like the fact, frankly, that it is inexpensive, and it's shipped to my home. And I also like the handle. It makes me feel like I'm a grown up. Harry's founders were tired of paying for razors that were overpriced and overdesigned, so they combined a simple, clean design with quality, durable blades at a fair price. As a result, their replacement cartridges are just $2 each. Thanks to Harry's 100% quality guarantee, if you don't love your shave, they give you a full refund. No wonder they have received over 20,000 five-star reviews on Trustpilot and Google, and they have supported this show for years now.
For years. They're the OGs.
They are some of the OGs. And they make me look good when I go on to the few occasions where I have to shave. Harry's wants you to start off the new year right. So they created a trial offer for our listeners. Go to harrys.com/majority report. You'll get a $13 value trial set that comes with everything you need for a close, comfortable shave, including a weighted ergonomic handle, a 5-blade razor with lubricating strip and trimmer blade, a rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover. Again, our listeners can redeem their trial set at harrys.com/majority report. Make sure you go to harrys.com/majority report to redeem your offer and let them know I sent you to help support the show. All right, let's check this out here too. A big story, obviously, over the weekend came from footage of there was a big right to life, anti-abortion, anti-choice rally this weekend in Washington, D.C. And apparently one of the things that the folks who want to tell women what to do with their bodies do, and look, you know, that's what this comes down to. There is no middle ground here. And I understand that for some people, the idea of abortion is icky. Frankly, the idea of any medical procedure, I find icky. Okay? The idea of anything that involves almost the human body, I think I find difficult. But aside from that, but the reality is this. You are either placing the creating rights for a fetus that necessarily infringe upon the freedom of and the rights of women, or you're not. That's it. There's no other equation, and you have to make that choice. So one of the things that these anti-abortionists do is they send down, and I don't want to play this one. I don't want to play this one first. What they do is they send busloads of kids from Catholic schools to juice their numbers. And I'm sure that the majority of them are happy to restrict a woman's right to have sovereignty over her own body. That's what they are told in their parochial schools. Do I have a problem with religious schools? Not necessarily, although I think, look, when we talk about all the problems of religion, a lot of it is because they are, it comes from fundamentalists of all stripes who are educated in, no, I want to see the other one first, the educated in these schools, whether it's, you know, madrasas or yeshivas or in these Catholic parochial schools. These are where the fundamentals versions of religion are taught, and a lot of secular ideas are excluded. Now, so apparently, and I've watched the entire two-hour video. I skipped through. I went every 15 seconds to get to the parts where there was confrontations. But basically what happened is this. On the Lincoln Memorial, there's these guys called the Black Israelites. And they basically get on a soapbox, and I imagine they do this every Sunday.
They do this all over. I mean,
well, they do it right here on Fulton.
Yeah, they do it right here on Fulton.
They do it. I remember 25 years ago seeing them in Central Square in Cambridge. They have been doing this for a long time, and they dress in sort of a combination of, like, there's a little bit of Haile Selassie involved, and there's they consider themselves the real Jews, or Hebrews or Israelites.
Israelites.
Guess who's coming to Seder?
They often, like, will carry a big staff.
Goddamn right.
By that I mean a stick. And
spacesuit looking brothers.
I don't know if they still do it this way, but it used to be one guy would read scripture, and then the other guy would repeat the scripture and then give commentary. And it is the gist of what they have to say is that they are the true Israelites. White people are bad, but they are largely harmless. Now, I imagine if you have never seen them before, you might be somewhat intimidated. There were four of these guys. I would also imagine, though, if you're with 100 other guys, even if they're younger, the intimidation is less so. So what happened is these Black Israelites were doing their thing for like an hour, because the video I saw was actually shot by one of them. They always used to shoot a videotape of themselves. And then these kids started to amass, and they started to trade barbs. And at one point, also at the Lincoln Memorial, were these indigenous Americans who were basically doing a ceremony, and they tried to intercede by walking in between. It was about 20 feet, 30 feet. The kids were on the steps, and the Black Israelites. And they tried to intercede by just simply going through and continuing to play their drums. And prior to this, the kids had already started to do, like, some of their, I would imagine, were their sports cheers at their sports games, which are all about them being hulkish. One guy took his shirt off and led all of them. I mean, it's a little bit scary to see, 100, because I think there's about 100 students there, right? At least all guys cheering in unison as if they're some type of paramilitary.
We sure this isn't a Gillette ad?
Yeah, no kidding. But so the native elders came through, started playing their drums, and the kids, who apparently were not so brave and boisterous that they would get up in the face of the Black Israelites, had no problem doing this with an elderly Vietnam War vet native. And here's clips. Now, the one that everybody's seen is the one with the guy who's got the smirk on his face staring at But this is a little bit more telling about what went on there based upon my going through those 2 hours of video. Basically, yeah, like literally 100 kids standing right in front of these guys, admonishing each other not to touch them, mocking them. And look, 15-year-old boys in any context can be huge a-holes. And what they're doing is despicable. I don't believe I've even heard an interpretation that they were somehow trying to join in and thought that they were involved in this, in what the elders were doing. It's despicable. But what's really despicable is that theoretically they have chaperones around there who are allowing this to happen. They have come from a culture where even their teachers at this school have no problem with them sitting there mocking this guy. No problem with it whatsoever. And that's the issue here. I've seen 15-year-old boys do all sorts of effed up things. But when you've got 100 of them there who are on a school trip, and this behavior, incidentally, was not confined to this moment. Here is, apparently, this is before, somebody on Twitter: the Covington Catholic boys harassed my friends and I before the incident with Nathan Phillips even happened. I'm tired of reading things saying they were provoked by anyone else other than their own egos and incident. There's just about 20 seconds of video. It is three girls walking by and like a dozen of these guys yelling at them.
MAGA! I'm so tired already.
Yeah, they're yelling MAGA and build the wall at the right to life thing. Now, look, I would imagine if you're going to bring your students down, that is to a protest based on your religious principles, that maybe, if this was sort of a legit exercise in any way, you'd say, got to be respectful, guys. Incidentally, don't leer and harass women walking by, and don't mock natives, elderly people who are engaging in a drum session. I mean, the idea that these guys were either allowed to just wander around without chaperones, which I doubt is the case, or that the chaperones just sat back and watched this. And anybody wants to make an argument that they don't come from a sick culture. It's one thing for kids to do this, but this is what happens when kids do this. They get punished, or they're reprimanded by their teachers or by their parents. And that's how they learn not to do this.
Right. Where were the fathers?
Well, I mean, listen, honestly, let's just imagine that this was a Catholic priest, an elderly Catholic priest who was there, you know, saying, Jesus says to da 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 da, and 100 black kids or Latino kids from a local school were sitting there going, Jesus said to do this, dancing around. I mean, can you imagine? First of all, the cops would be there in about 30 seconds. And right now,
every news media outlet in the country would be interviewing the parents of all those kids. How could you let this happen? And I can assure you that none of those parents would have the funds to get a high-priced PR firm to justify what their kids were doing. So I think it's wrong to go out and single out these kids, because the ire should not be on the kids. It should be on the context, the parents, and the school that encourages this behavior by never reprimanding them for it. And by not putting, like, the idea that you allow these 15-year-old kids to go out and do this suggests that this is nothing new in terms of, like, the hands-off nature of the chaperones.
Well, they're wearing literal symbols of misogyny and white supremacy.
I mean, from their perspective, it's not. But so, I mean, I'm willing to. I understand. But from their perspective, it's not. But from their perspective, there's no way they can justify that behavior. Like, they can justify, we have a right to wear Make America Great hats. And they do. But there's no way they can justify the behavior, their actions. And it's, I would suggest it's not a coincidence that they were wearing those things. And it certainly makes the argument, and it strengthens the argument, that those things stand for racism and stand for misogyny. But from their perspective, they have no defense. They have no defense. It also implicates, you know, the type of person maybe who right to lifers too.
Definitely.
Yeah, when you shout build a wall at a Native American, it really lays bare the real meaning of that phrase.
I don't know that they yelled that to I haven't seen evidence of that. I saw evidence of them yelling it at those girls, those young women who were walking by, and I don't know if that means maybe they showed more restraint. Listen, I'm just saying in terms of the evidence of what I've seen. I've watched 2 hours of tape. And but what they were clearly doing is mocking these guys.
They're doing tomahawk and, chop. And
yeah, exactly. Stuff.
This is one where you don't need to add the extra. Like, we've got it.
Right.
The and tomahawk chop is sufficient.
I mean, it's just simply, you know, it's appalling in this day and age that you don't have teachers out there. Like, there is no video of the teachers going, guys, get back over there.
Back on the bus.
Get back on the bus. Walk over there. Walk away. There's none of that. How could that possibly be? How could that possibly be? And then you have to backfill that answer. Here is a clip of Phillips. Nathan Phillips speaking about his experience there. It's conceivable, I guess. No, it's not conceivable after you hear the guy speak or you see the guy. But the idea that he and two other guys his age were attacking and challenging these.
They were there to raise awareness for missing and murdered indigenous women, I think is what the protest is specifically about. So they weren't there to, like, even really protest. They're there to just, I guess, raise awareness for their issue.
But the idea that their intent was in some way challenging. Look, the boys, to the extent that they were challenged by anybody, were by those black Israelites. And their bullying nature comes out when it's clear that they don't start getting aggressive and in anybody's face until the elderly man comes up.
I had put myself in a really dangerous situation, you know. It's like, here's a group of people who were angry at somebody else, and I put myself in front of that, and all of a sudden I'm the one who's all that anger and all that wanting to have the freedom to just rip me apart, you know. That was scary. I'm a Vietnam Times veteran, and I know that mentality of there's enough of us, we can do this.
Then Phillips describes the tense moments now being replayed over and over again online when a young man got right in his face. Watch.
When I started going forward and that massive groups of people started separating and separating and moving aside to allow me to move out of the way or to proceed, this young fella put himself in front of me and wouldn't move. And so I could, if I took another step, I would be putting my person into his presence, into his space, and I would have touched him. And that would have been the thing that the group of people would have needed to spring on me.
I mean, you know, the idea that there is even, you know, that it's what's weird is that you don't even hear any of these people's, like, teachers or parents or whatnot saying, like, our kids acted poorly and we're going to punish them and explain to them exactly what they did. Right? Like, that's all it would have taken. That's all it would have taken. But yeah, this is those Wisconsin school kids who were given the Zeke Heil. And I don't know, people are digging up stuff on these other kids about the practices at the school. You don't need to. There's no way these kids show up in that situation, act that way, and all you need to do is see their parents' reaction. All you need to do is know the fact that there was no teachers or chaperones there who told them not to do this. You don't need to see anything else, because that they don't pop out of the womb like that. They get grown. They get raised like that. And again, if these 15-year-old kids were black or brown, the entire country right now would be having a moment of, like, what's wrong with the culture of black and brown people that their parents don't care about the way these kids act? I mean, that's what we would be hearing.
No, I see 100 little Brett Kavanaughs when I look at them, and it's horrifying.
That was one of the things when Brett Kavanaugh was just like, I'm allowed to get away with that at that age.
That's how you raise rapists, seriously. Someone just sent me another video clip. I don't know if you want to play it. Yeah.
I mean, I haven't seen any, but let's see what it is. I mean, I don't
just,
know.
I IM'd it to you in G-chat.
Do we know what's in it?
It says newest. I mean, this is a tweet. We can watch the video, but it says newest video to surface of the Covington kids shows one of them yelling to a group of girls, it's not rape if you enjoy it.
Oh, yeah. No, that was they weren't naming it. They weren't yelling that to the girls. They were yelling that to the black Israelites. And I think it was in the context of I'm not sure exactly what it was the context of, but we can play it if you want. But I mean, look, it's clear that we don't need. I mean, we've seen it. This is when they were confronting the black Israelites. Yeah, there's more to that.
They were being, like, flippant back in that.
I suspect they were talking about, historical or whatnot it is. I think that's taken out of context. But nevertheless, there's enough context there that still, right. It's damning stuff.
Now, they're wrong about how they read scripture, but they're right about the devil.
Exactly. All right, let's just briefly, the Stephen Miller and Jared Kushner and Donald Trump got together and put together a plan to, I guess, a new proposal, they called it, to get the government to open up. The idea was a 3-year extension of DACA for Dreamers. And now, this is a hollow promise in many respects. First off, right now, essentially, till the 15th of February, and we may hear something different, there's a good chance that SCOTUS is not going to take up the case. So DACA is already in effect for at least a year. Nevertheless, still a horrible situation for them. But 2 or 3 years does not solve the problem at all. There's also a TPS fix. No, I'm sorry. The bill would not extend TPS status for 300,000.
Are you serious? They didn't even put... All right.
No. Nope. It also limits asylum for Central American minors. They will be ineligible for asylum if they don't apply at a processing center to be established in Central America. Now, what is problematic about this? Why do you seek asylum? You seek asylum if you're a child because your parents are afraid that you're going to get killed or recruited into a drug gang in this part of the country or raped. Can anyone see the problem with sticking around and filing your application there? Like, who's going to be standing out in front of the door watching who's trying to get away? Like, that's going to be someone's paid job. You're the guy who stands in front of the door and finds out who we're intimidating who's trying to get away. And then we kill that person. This is not a situation where people are like, oh, I'm going to spend the next 3 months and I'm going to plan my trip to the United States. And then I'm going to go. It's, oh, I got threatened today. I'm leaving tomorrow. That's why asylum is all about getting to the country and then applying. Because theoretically, these people need to get away from their situation. And only 50,000 Central American minors would be allowed to apply for asylum each year. Only 15,000 asylum applications can be granted. Well, this is just absurd, right? It's just absurd. So the bill was dead on arrival. They knew it. It was the same type of publicity stunt that Jared was pushing the week before. And the whole thing is geared towards getting people to say, look, this is the fault of both sides. This is the fault of both sides. I will remind you that we are still, that 3 weeks ago, the Republicans were in control of everything. And that a year ago, the Democrats had offered five times the amount of funding for a deal. And that in between those two times, Pence tried to make a deal and Trump reneged. There had been a deal made and Trump reneged. No one can negotiate with anybody. So what kind of stooge would go on and say this is both sides? Well, Jake Tapper, but who's he interviewing?
I don't know.
So long as both sides are not willing to come together and have a real conversation and hash out the differences and come up with something that works best for the American people.
That's interesting, though, because you sound like you're not just blaming President Trump on this. You're also blaming Democratic leaders in Congress.
It gets hard.
Both sides have completely hardened their positions and are unwilling to come together and work out the differences. And that's the problem here. It's the problem that we see with a lot of issues that come before us in Washington is an unwillingness to just say, hey, here's my position, here's yours. Let's figure out how we can work out the differences that we can, putting forward the best solution for the American people. Our federal employees and contractors and their families have gone on for far too long suffering as a result of this intransigence where people are putting politics before the well-being of the American people and our country.
Now, even in my most generous moments, I would say, oh, yeah, the politics are when Pelosi says you can't come to give the State of the Union address. That is, you know, politics. She's trying to highlight the fact that the government is shut down. And when Trump endangers the lives of Congress people by saying, oh, go, you're going on commercial flight to Afghanistan, that's politics. But there is a real difference of opinion here. I don't know what Tulsi Gabbard's, what she's offering, what she thinks the solution should be. But I would be curious to know what that is.
Maybe it's a non-fucking sellout solution.
Like slats?
Yeah. Yeah, maybe something like slats.
But I mean, she's a reasonable bipartisan, okay? If the Republicans want to lock all the kids in cages and the Democrats want to lock none of the kids in cages, the moderate, respectable, reasonable solution is to lock some kids in cages.
I want to see what exactly what she's putting on the table. Like, what's her solution to this? What's the solution that's going to bring everybody together without politics?
I think what's particularly funny about this is I mean, we've already talked about all of the really serious policy areas where she's got, you know, where there's major problems with her. But like, her record on this is not particular, and even her previous record on this is not rhetoric is not particularly bad at all. So in this is also just like, if you're a
run for president,
pure political malpractice, like this is somebody like, if you're interested in her and you want her to cut a lane for herself in this primary, this is like opposite of proof of concept. Like, this isn't speaking to anybody in this Democratic primary, from the most conservative to the most left. There is no constituency there for this kind of comment. I mean, it's actually quite bizarre. I don't know what, like, all of the people who have records like this and have talked like this in the past have been like, cutting. It's almost like you know, those old, like those like cartoons, like the Roadrunner. Like they have like smoke traces to get away from this kind of rhetoric. People like Cory Booker, and she's just like stepping right into it as if we're like in 2008.
Well, maybe she's so confident she's bizarre. Just looking ahead to the general.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting.
Go straight to the general,
John Kasich. Tulsi Gabbard, third party bid.
John Kasich and Tulsi Gabbard. I'll tell you what, Tulsi, she surfs, and I see a lot of people out here in Ohio that are upset. Hey, Tulsi, do you know how surfboards work?
I mean,
their campaign events. He lectures her on the history.
I don't know
of
that
Hawaiian
that would be the ticket. I don't know what that would be the ticket, but. Not only do I think that both sidism is hollow, gratuitous BS.
Right.
If you think that's the case, then you should lay out where you think the two sides can meet if you're so convinced that it's just politics.
Well, maybe there could be mediation by Narendra Modi.
It is also super, super bad political instincts, unless you're already running to get a VP ticket.
No Labels relaunch,
or I don't know.
It's bizarre.
Totally bizarre.
For what it's worth, even in that sort of like lane you're talking about, like the kind of No Labels garbage that rhetoric's built for, like her record is not. In some ways, in some very good ways, it's not in alignment with that. And in some, like, those
Pat people, Buchanan. I mean, I don't know that it would be Pat Buchanan, knows?
Well, that's a whole other...
Who knows? All right, let's talk a little bit about the border wall.
We'll see you post fucking war.
This is sort of a fascinating breakdown. And then we're going to head into the fun half. This is important, I think, in terms of knowing the wall. There's research done that took polling data from the Public Religion Research Institute's annual American Values Survey. And the research sort of cross-referenced support for the wall. Wall supporters express vastly more hostile views than wall opponents about the impact of not only undocumented but also legal immigration. That's fairly obvious, right? I mean, if you're a supporter of the wall, you got a problem with undocumented immigration. And frankly, all the data suggests there's not a huge quotient of people out there who are okay with undocumented immigrants. But have an issue with documented immigrants. So obviously, if you have a problem with undocumented immigrants, the chances are it's from your pool that has a problem with immigrants, period. And there's quite a bit of correlation there. I know a lot of people like to suggest that somehow this is only about undocumented immigration, although for some reason, the Trump administration won't extend TPS protections to people, which is legal immigration. But putting that aside for a moment, what this poll does show is that there's also a correlation, oddly enough, between the wall and some perspectives on folks' perspective on their fellow Americans. This is going to be very, very surprising to people. How's my sarcasm voice?
It's pretty good.
Three-fourths of wall supporters said the recent police killings of African Americans were isolated incidents rather than part of a broader pattern of how police treat blacks in this country. The opposite of wall opponents saw a broader pattern. Three-fourths of wall supporters rejected the idea. 75% of wall supporters rejected the idea that generations of slavery and discrimination have created conditions that make it difficult for blacks to work their way out of the lower class. Nearly two-thirds of wall opponents agreed with that statement. See a difference here, folks? Just odd, this correlation. Wonder why that would be. Almost two-thirds of wall supporters said discrimination against whites is now as big a problem as discrimination against minorities.
It's up there, folks.
Oh, my God.
It's big.
That is really surprising.
Super big.
Three-fourths of wall opponents rejected that view. And in a nod to my theory that racists and misogynists do not see their racism and misogyny as distinct, but rather just like, hey, what? They're not like me. Nearly two-thirds of wall opponents say the feminist movement accurately reflects the views of most women. Nearly two-thirds of wall supporters say it doesn't. One in three wall supporters say the movement, the Me Too movement, has led to the unfair treatment of men. Only one in 11 wall opponents agree. 25% of wall opponents believe discrimination against men is now a bigger problem as discrimination against women. So that's one out of four wall opponents think that men are discriminated equally as women. But 54% of wall supporters say men do face as much discrimination as women. That's pretty stunning. Like, how do you go through your life and experience that? How do 54%, how do over half of any cohort go through life thinking that men are as discriminated as women? Like, in what context? Like, there's women's night at the bowling alley three nights a week, exactly. And we only get two. Like, what? Like, honestly, like, where? It's crazy. I mean, but it's not crazy. The Donald Trump has known exactly what he's doing, and he appeals to racists, probably because he's racist.
I'm defenseless against that kind of female insanity.
Yeah, there you go. That's part of the problem. There you go. All right, we're going to take a quick break in the fun half. One more study. This is worth talking about. Youth suicide rates are higher in states with high gun ownership rates. This is according to a team at a Boston University School of Public Health. Household gun ownership was the single biggest predictor of youth suicide rate in a state. The single biggest predictor. And I think the response that, I mean, I'm just trying to imagine the response that people on the right are giving to something like this. Well, that's just because guns are more effective. Well, it might be a good idea to get rid of the guns. It's weird because people kill people. Guns don't kill people. Yet this correlates. It is well known that people with access to a gun are far more likely to complete suicide. Some data had suggested that gun ownership in general was associated with higher suicide rates. The research looked at some questions. Isn't it possible that gun households are systemically different from non-gun households? Right? So that it's just a total coincidence that there's something about the desire to have guns that leads everybody in the House to be depressed, and that the guns don't cause the increase in suicide rate. It just happens that people who are suicidal tend to have more guns, which is also not such
a
good
idea. Great stat.
That's not a, no, but yeah. And the researchers looked at the question: is it possible that there are just higher rates of depression and suicidal ideation in a gun household? Even if that was the case, that would be a pretty compelling argument to limit gun ownership.
To make you think of killing yourself?
Well, no. That there are a certain percentage of people out there who want to commit suicide. Maybe we should just prevent them from having guns so they're not so successful. That to me seems like it. But
I want to see how they vote first.
They didn't. That turned out to be not to the case. For each 10 percentage point increase in household gun ownership, the youth suicide rate increased by 27%. This is in the American Journal of Preventive Medicine. The only other factors that were associated with the overall youth suicide rates were suicide attempt rate and the percentage of youth who were Native American. So, for example, in Alaska, the youth suicide rate is 15 or so suicides per 100,000 people. This is under age of 19. And just about 60% of households have guns. In South Dakota, the suicide rate is 14.9 per 100,000. Again, just under 60% of homes had guns in 2004. In New York and New Jersey, suicide rate is 2.6 or so per 100,000. And you have rates of 20% have households have guns. And in New Jersey, 11.4%. I mean, I suppose you could look at this and say, all right, well, let me look at what upstate New York is. Because that's maybe more like it is in a place like South Dakota on some level, right? Maybe it's just depressing to be in a place where it's so rural. And but that's the fact. The availability of firearms is contributing to an increase in the actual number of suicides, not just leading youth to substitute other means of suicide for guns. So there you have it. Meanwhile, the Supreme Court is reviewing a case, and we'll talk more about this, on the Second Amendment. The case itself is narrow in its scope in terms of New York City and a particular handgun regulation, but the principles that may come out of it may essentially wipe out the ability for any gun control possible. Period. End of story. So on that happy note, let's go to the fun half.
Tonight at 7 o'clock. See you then. That'll be fun.
Tonight's Tuesday.
Tuesday, okay. Michael Brooks Show, Daniel Bester and Corey Pine. Get your tickets too. There's only a couple dozen left. Did a live show Friday, February 1st. We had like a 3-hour brainstorm yesterday. Going to be really fun.
Oh, you plan it out? Oh, okay.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we've decided to take a little bit of a different track on this one.
Oh, all right. Just one way of going about it.
Yeah. Patreon.com/TMBS. Get the whole thing this Sunday, our second candidate guide. We're talking about Tulsi Gabbard's candidacy, but it's really going to also serve as kind of an informal or illicit history of the RSS, the Indian paramilitary organization that backs the BJP government.
As soon as you said that, I was immediately like, oh, I know who that guy is.
RSS?
Yeah, the guy who made the Real Simple syndication software.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. Future show.
Jamie, Antifada.
So this week on the Antifada, you can still listen to our episode from last week where we talk about the insane Russian Netflix series about the life and times of Leon Trotsky. We also have a bonus wherein I explain a stupid inside joke that I got H. John Benjamin to say for my idiot friends the other day at the live show. And also tomorrow, we are dropping a brand new History is a Weapon It's been a long time coming. I think the last one was about 6 months ago. And Sean wants me to tease who the guest is and not say it. So in respect of his wishes, I will just say he's a very intelligent chap who likes to get angry about stuff. And they're going to be talking about why the U.S. never had a real labor party or a socialist party.
Matt?
Yeah, brand new literary hangover dropped this weekend. The House of the Seven Gables by Nathaniel Hawthorne. It's a really good episode, folks, so check that out. Oh, we dunk on Ben Shapiro in it. We bring up the his old, just sell your houses if you live in the path of, you know, climate change. So
right, to the dumbest people in the
what,
world.
What you do is you flip the house. It's pretty obvious.
Of course.
Because it's a story about property and that sort of an inheritance. So
if your house goes underwater, what you do is you would sell it.
The level of stupidity of that comment is so stunning. Like, and you can it's stunning just from a common sense perspective. Like, somehow the market's not going to be aware of what's going to happen to that house, but you are, right? Like, somehow, like, other buyers are just going to be completely clueless.
That's how he views capitalism.
Also from a, like, a morality perspective. Like, if you can find a sucker who will buy your lemon, buy, you sell it to him.
Yeah, exactly.
But then there's also a fundamental misunderstanding of policy. Houses who are on the coast are able to sell for one reason, because the government subsidizes insurance, coastal flood insurance, period, end of story. Insurance companies will not insure these things.
Maybe you want to live in a giant indoor swimming pool. You know,
the market will take care of it unless the government decides not to subsidize the only reason why people can afford to buy those houses. You cannot get insurance for those houses.
I don't know. I think Ben's more interested in ideas.
More about ideas. Folks.
I think we're trying to do an idea show.
Thought experiment.
God.
But what if
just
there
the,
was
the
beach
stupidity
houses that weren't subsidized?
Incidentally, right? He is the leading intellectual on the right. Is that right?
Yep. Yeah. So if you follow him and he tries to challenge AOC to a debate, which he does basically weekly, just get in his replies and say he should debate Sam Cedar.
There we go.
Yeah, he's great also with that AOC stuff. They're like, nobody cares. She's so lame. I'm going to go tweet at her again now.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, she's a complete afterthought. Let me just say that for the sixth time today to her.
It's all I like to do is challenge the people to debate who are never going to debate me.
Well, maybe you should dress a little sexier and he'll pay more attention to you.
I don't know if I can actually
get some hoops.
Pull it off, but I thought I had today. Folks, your support makes this show possible. Become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, don't forget justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code majority. Get 10% off. For whatever reason, I was recounting the story of the Mike Cernovich thing, and one of the key moments in all of that development was the folks at Just Coffee sending me an email tipping me off that Cernovich was attempting to intimidate our advertisers. They are, in addition to being purveyors of fine coffees, fair trade coffees, and being a co-op, and being the folks who gave free coffee to the folks in Madison back in 2011 during the protests against Walker. They're also just like genuinely strong movement partners and great people. So justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code majority, get 10% off. See you in the fun half.
You are in for it.
All right, folks, 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.